WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a beautiful, beautiful springtime here. Not just because, like, concerts are happening, bikinis, beach plans, this, that, 4th of July, holidays, all that. But the Orioles are relevant again. And we're going to be up at Fallston on Tuesday, the 23rd, doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll be giving these away. We had a lot of winners last week at Fadley's and some other spots. Our friends at Window Nation, 866-90 Nation, making me wear the fun bucket hat that it's not orange, right? I've told Dennis, I get rid of this blue. I need orange stuff around here because orange is the new purple. Marty Conway joins us now. He is our defending champion and sports business professor, insider, one-time Oriole executive, as well as Texas Rangers and Major League Baseball, as well as Professor Conway of all good things sports and business at Georgetown. Marty, I think the last time we got together, Lamar was still like on the field throwing the football in season, and I don't even remember. I mean, I got banned by the NFL, thrown out in Cincinnati, didn't cover the playoffs. The Orioles started playing, and they started playing well. They signed Lamar. You missed the whole Lamarathon. I didn't get one word out of you on the Lamarathon, Marty.
In fact, I think maybe one of the last times, I don't know if it was the last time we talked about, was Baltimore not getting a host city World Cup. Remember that? We talked
Absolutely.
About that. Right. And so just yesterday, day before, whenever it's been, some of the local New Yorks and others are now unveiling their, FIFA has unveiled their 2026 logo. New York, New Jersey has talked about theirs. And so,
which soon, right? It's sooner than you think, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a year ago, we were talking about missing out on getting one of those cities. And now it's, the salt is coming into the wounds to see some of these other cities getting ready to host, which is, it's 3 years out, but it's going to go quick for sure. Yeah.
Well, there's just so much to talk about in regard to money and where it's going. And I've been to a lot of concerts lately since I've sort of gotten thrown out of sports and walked the streets and people ask me why. And I say, why don't you ask them? Mm-hmm. But it is a fascinating time to see people coming back to the ballpark, to see, be at Janet Jackson downtown and not be able to get into Anita Baker, not be able to get into Bruce Springsteen, the Eagles, just all of this, Lizzo, all of these things that are happening since the last time we talked. And man, I put Baltimore Positive together 5-6 years ago. The city's on fire. Trump's running the country. Mayor's going to prison. Like all of this stuff happening. And when there was traffic Thursday night, Mark. I went to a cocktail party at the Center Club, and everybody was bitching about the traffic. And I'm like, I live down here during the plague. Traffic is a good. There was traffic in Baltimore Thursday. And you know what caused it? The baseball game let out of
So, I mean, you're right. Good, as we say, good problems to have, right? So if you're complaining about traffic, that means that some of the things that have come together quite nicely. So, but yeah, look, it's been a long 3 to 5 years for the baseball rebuild, and for a lot of other things happening. So, if you can wait long enough, things will come around. Look, in 2019, the Washington Nationals won the World Series, and 2023, they're in the rebuild process. The Orioles are almost in the inverse. They were competitive in 2016, 2017, and then started their rebuild process through the pandemic. So if you can stick around long enough, you can see the changes in sports for sure.
It's really delicate, right? When you see the Kansas City Royals and nobody goes, and the Pirates win for a week and a half, and then they come here and they turn back into the Pirates. And where the Orioles are, and I want to take it, I mean, I don't have you on often. Let's deep dive this because people are coming up to me. I went to an event with Mike Elias. Mike Elias has sent me emails now. Like that, these are competent people, and I see the internet baseball nerds and Birdlandia and the people that don't just cheer for the team, but they sort of wear the bird head even through 108 losses. But even those people who are true believers and have always been true believers in the Angelos family, which I mean, it really takes a reach given what we all know, but where John is in running this thing now, the machine's rolling, right? They got a bird bath. I'd love to hear your, I mean, this was the stuff you used to do milk the cow day, trying to figure out ways to create a Wild Bill Hagee, to create something that feels like inertia to get people back to the ballpark. Marty, I have spent the last 2 weeks of this program, look up and down Baltimore Positive, go out and check it, of doing nothing but talking to people, my clients, my friends, Leonard Raskin, Dennis Kolatsis went 2 days in a row. Everybody's trying to get back down there. I almost went on Thursday afternoon, but I had a lunch appointment. We both sat and watched the game at Nacho Mama's in Towson. You know, Ohtani hits the home run to start the game. But Ohtani being in, and I feel like there's a little renaissance happening here. And then I ask you the question, and the grownups in the room, are they ready for this? And I mean, are they ready to start spending money on players and being really serious about being a franchise again?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's an open question. There are two questions, first of all, for me. And that is, when you go through a rebuild like this, whether it's in Baltimore or, you know, pick another city, Washington's trying to go through that rebuild right now. What is the opportunity cost and the collateral damage of that, right? One of the things that we don't know, because we don't measure and we don't talk about, how much did that cost really, right? Which is lack of fans for 3-4 years. Obviously some of that was pandemic induced as well,
but what's it cost the city too? I want to bring
that
in.
Yeah, that's really costly. That's really, really costly, right? To the, you know, how much did you not take in that you could have, and all these different things.
Well, so Taylor Swift left $200 million in Nashville this weekend. I saw to hotels, the hotel people got together and said, let's do 10 nights of her, you know? Right. So when things make a city come to life, Janet Jackson, I've been down there and I've been feeling it lately, and I lived down there and I had to leave because it left me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's a part of it. So it's good to see what the other side is, for sure. And you're right. These organizations, these sports teams, have always been part of the economic engine, whether you like it or not, whether you don't want to vote for tax increases or new stadium dollars or different things like that. They are proven to be a part of the economic engine of the cities that they're in. And you live and die with that, right? You live and die with how well they're doing and when they're not doing well, and what those collateral issues are in the half a mile around these stadium areas. Look, they're trying to build the southern end of Camden Yards, right? Putting in the Horseshoe Casino and the Paramount Theater coming, and Topgolf and all those other areas, right? To do that. So it's really important for these areas to be connected. And I've said before, I think in the next iteration of Oriole Park, with a new lease that's should be signed hopefully soon, that allows for them to start to collect the $600 million that's been allocated to the baseball stadium. What is that going to happen? I think it's going to close that gap between the baseball stadium and the football stadium. I think parking lot A is something that becomes redevelopment for commercial redevelopment, so that there's something going on there more than just 5 o'clock at night, getting ready for the baseball game, Sunday afternoons, whatever it is. That property is crucial to the development of downtown, that section over there. So
more or less than Harbor Place?
I think less, because there's just less area overall. But I think it's important that end of Central City downtown be part of the redevelopment.
Marty, come on, dude. You were part of the original vision, where the Camden Club was going to be open 365, where the walkway was going to be a Christmas lover's lane. It was going to be Hershey Candy Lane. Yeah. There were going to be vendors. We were going to, like, that was the vision for you and Janet Marie and all of you 30 years ago, right?
Yeah, but you're right. But you can't do it yourself. The team isn't going to be able to do it yourself. You need developers. You need teams of people like that who have the professional experience in developing entertainment districts, parks, recreation, all those specific areas. Because as I said, that the ballpark itself is just that economic engine 80, 90 times a year, or maybe other things as well. But you're right. Camden Station on the north part, parking lot A on the south part, and those areas, they have to be built so that it's almost like a barbell for me. You have the east of the harbor, west of the harbor, and ultimately the center city, that have to become consistently alive. And I think I think the next step is for the team to strike a lease deal with the state, which I'm confident they'll do now that Wes Moore is the governor. They didn't really want to have anything to do with Larry Hogan in that experience. And I think they will come up with something that involves developers and other third parties that can put money in and understand what the return is, 360 plus days a year from getting people downtown and being a part of it. You can't just have pockets where the casino is and Pickles Pub and other areas. It has to be contiguous so that people feel comfortable being down there on a regular Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night in the summer or early fall to be a part of it. So I think that's what likely happens next, and I hope we're all around to see the other side of it.
Marty Conway is here. He is the good professor at Georgetown University, schooling us, taking us to school like Ric Flair on all things business and sports in the city. Westmore and John, you brought that up, and whatever that marriage is going to be and their flight down to Atlanta and all the Preakness dalliances, you know, being done in the business, being done in the corporate tents and like all of that this week. But behind all of this is this dirty mass and money that you and I brought up forever, that nobody in the public understands, that I've written about for 17 years now, going back to the original sin in the summer of 2005 and the government tax issues and moving issues and TV issues and territorial issues and all that was baked into moving a franchise, right? And here we are two decades later, Peter's still alive, the thing's still in play, and really this is... We should talk about that before we talk about anything, right, Masson?
Yeah, it's central to what's going on, that the dollars there are so large. Again, I think we're at 10 or 11 years now of litigation, either pre-litigation or actually being in various courts around New York, which is central to it. We now know that there's an initial judgment from Major League Baseball, which has been, the process itself has been reaffirmed by the courts of New York, which says that the Masson entity owes the Nats somewhere in the range of $100 million from a five-year period going back to 2012 to 17. That's been affirmed and confirmed. Hasn't been paid. We don't know what that circumstance will be. It also sets up the next 5 years, which is there's going to be debate about that as well as to how much the Nationals are owed over and above what the current contract says. So in my rough math, I think you could be anywhere between $100 and $150 million total that this is in dispute over. That has to be settled. It has to be settled so that the Nationals can, the Lerner family can sell the team and move on from Major League Baseball. And it has to be settled on the Orioles front, because if they're interested in either getting limited partners or selling the team, you have to know what those cash flows are. So it is so central to the future of both of those teams, not just in terms of selling the team, but what are your cash flows so that you can invest in players, long-term contracts, those are the sorts. It has to get settled, whether it's through the courts or through negotiation, because it is central to the future of two teams in Major League Baseball, which is why I think Commissioner Rob Manfred will soon urge the parties to really get a settlement talks together so that both franchises can look at their future with much more certainty than they can right now.
Is there any chance that John's not as dug in as his old man on this money? Because, I mean, he's clearly convinced it's his money and he doesn't want to share it, right? I mean, like, I don't think there's any doubt about that. They've gone long. He went after his brother long and hard, right? So, I mean, as a guy that wants to dig in, I would say fair enough. And look, man, they're winning now. And I keep going back to that the magic elixir is nobody cares about any of this as long as Mountcastle hits a little tonight and Rodrigo straightens out and they're playing baseball here in October. If that's happening, all of this gets even cloudier to my way of thinking.
So, I don't know if it's so much a question of dug in. Look, I think what just happened in the New York Supreme Court, the highest court of the state, is they determined in a 6-0 unanimous decision that said the process that Major League Baseball followed was constitutional. There is not a due process claim that the Masson or the Orioles have on that process. What they weren't able to do was to say, here's how you should settle your monetary dispute. They've essentially said, from a process standpoint, you're no longer going to be coming into the New York court system and looking for relief on process. Now, should the Masson...
That's an Angelo's tradition, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's
every fight Angelos has ever been in. It's been, I'm not paying the bill until the Supreme Court tells me to, right?
The philosophy has been always about, they would much rather pay lawyers than pay plaintiffs, right? Which is to say, we will always take this to the farthest court of appeal that we can. And then perhaps there's some other judicial opportunity. But I think what's crystallizing here now is that unless they choose to refile this in a different venue, maybe in Maryland or wherever they think they would have a different venue, the process now shifts to how do we settle how much we owe? How do we finally determine it? And then when is it paid? Because look, at the end of the day, if either of those two teams want to change either ownership or frankly even bring in limited partner investors, which is something that maybe the Orioles would like to consider, you're not going to be able to do it until one of your largest three revenue streams, which is local media, has been determined, and then determine who's going to pay the legal fees once these things are final. So as I said, I think this is the year probably that it should be settled. If it's not, then I think Major League Baseball is going to have some real issues with the leadership of both teams and really force some sort of financial settlement because the Learners want to sell. They want to move on. Major League Baseball wants that transaction to happen ultimately, especially if they have buyers lined up, as it seems like they do. So that's why I think it's so central. But anything can happen because they could find another court. They could find another venue that maybe seemed favorable to them to make a different type of argument. But the due process argument in New York is over, and now it's on to something else, whatever that is.
Marty Conway and I go down various pathways. I want to stay with this. I mean, I want to get some Lamarathon out of you before it's over with. But you start peeling back the onion in Major League Baseball, and I'm thinking, all right, Rob Manfred's desk is only so big. He's always had the ability to sort of settle this in some way by getting the other owners to sort of gang up on Peter, but they're all afraid of it, right? And this has been going on for two decades. They've allowed this to happen. They've allowed Lerner to get screwed in front of everybody. They lent Lerner money, as I remember it, $75 million. They fronted some money a bunch of years ago to just cool it down a little bit. But the A's are on fire and moving right to Las Vegas, and yep, the Rays are on fire, and yep, they're yep on the field and off the field, right? I mean, that's yep, it's an ish show, right? And above all, above everything, Kansas City, places where they can't give tickets away anymore, salaries out of control. You know, where's Shohei Ohtani going to wind up? Because it ain't going to be the Anaheim Angels of Los Angeles and Disneyland. So all, and he's going to get $500-600 million. It's going to be an amazing amount of money tied into him, especially if the Dodgers or the Giants are fighting for, maybe the Mariners. I don't know. But all of these problems really go back to not just Masson. It goes back to the RSN, Sinclair. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm, they have mm-hmm a real – they yep love them some BAM, and they love them some MLB Network, and they mm-hmm love themselves some team website. But now all of a sudden – you can't yep find the game. Nobody can make money. Everybody's broke. I mean, I'm assuming John's holding his pockets open and saying, I don't have any money. And I'm thinking, you've known for 18 years you had to put $200-400 million aside because these people are going to come to get you. But mm-hmm they don't have this relief in Cincinnati or some right of these places where nobody can find the games and they can't get the games on. And these entities are
yep
are broke, right? And yep it's hard to say, how could you be broke if you're a regional sports network, but they're broke?
Yeah, well, you mentioned, so for Rob Manfred, priority A through F, I would say, is Oakland, Vegas, Oakland, Vegas, Oakland, Vegas. That has to be determined because I think it's pretty clear. I'm going to recommend a book to people that I've just recently started reading by a good friend, Andy Dolich, who was a longtime Major League Baseball and NBA and NFL. He's worked at every league. He partnered with another colleague to write a book called Goodbye Oakland. And it's an excellent, it's not just about a team leaving potentially Oakland. It's how teams in Kansas City and other places have eventually left. I think there's some segments on Baltimore. It's about how the relationship between teams and their cities and what can go right and what can go wrong. So I'm going to give a shout out to Andy here for Goodbye Oakland. You can get it on Amazon.com, and you should think about having him on your show.
Would love to do that.
But he's probably the most person in the know about it. But to your other point, churning below the system, churning below everything that's going on in the field is these issues with local television deals. You mentioned Bally Sports, our regional sports network that covers about 15 Major League Baseball teams. And you take into account two things. Number one, last quarter, there were more than 2.5 million people, families, homes, who cut their cable cord. It was the biggest reduction on a quarterly basis that has happened over the last 10 years. 10 years ago, 8 years ago, you and I were talking about 85% of U.S. households had cable access. Now it's below 60%. That's what concerns Major League Baseball, the NHL, and the NBA. Does not concern the NFL. They're not concerned with that. And so you have these declining revenue situations that are now running counter to what the players want, which is an Ohtani contract, an Adley Rutschman contract, whoever it is to do.
It's also a Big Ten network issue and like all the rest of it that goes down the line. It's an MTV issue. Yeah. It's an issue for everybody, right?
And so you cannot sign these folks unless you have a certainty of your future revenue streams and have a very good understanding. When people were signing up to cable and taking regional sports networks, including Masson, you could project that to the future. And I'm sure they did that. Now that these revenues are going in the other direction, you have to start thinking about what am I cutting? What am I going to get other revenues from other places? Because I can assure you, even though there are 20 or 25,000 people at the gate for an Orioles game on any given weeknight and maybe 35,000 for a weekend, that's nice to have, but it's not going to get you where you need to get to. You need national TV money, you need regional local TV money, and you need corporate sponsorship. Those are the kind of dollars that get you to the places where the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Cubs and other organizations like that can get to.
Marty Conway is our guest. If you just tuned in on AM 1570, obviously out on the pod, always teaching the lessons of sports and business and life to the sometimes young people, sometimes old people like me at Georgetown University. I guess the last thing on the baseball piece is to take it back to Baltimore and your heart and soul and my heart and soul and saying they're coming back. What do you need to see from the team? I mean, on the field, I think they're going to win. They're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Then there's the commitment of money. Yeah. To sign real players when the time comes, or to buy a pitcher, or dare I say, and I brought this up, if Ohtani sells tickets, why wouldn't you go buy him? I mean, why is it that, I mean, baseball's created this sport where like we're not even allowed to have like the best toys. We're not allowed to do that. And we don't even talk about it around here the last 30 years. And I said, we were the ones that bought Alomar and Key. And I saw David, we bought all sorts of players back in the day and played the game. And we played baseball in October, as I remembered. This was a hell of a price to pay to lose all these years, but to hit it with Rutschman, to hit it with Henderson and Kowser, and looks like Holiday's. I mean, all these guys are coming that they are a dynasty until Mike Moustakas and, you know, that whole group in Kansas City, it just goes away. How do you build something that's sustainable here as you're doing this? Because that's over the hill for me. I don't know if there's a parade or not, but I know that there's a fire going on right now for the first time in a long time. And it's only been a handful of times in 30 years where they can start something again and have even their biggest critic, me, say, Maybe they're turning the corner, but then I see who's sitting at the top chair, and I say I don't know. They're doing squirt in the outfield. People are digging it, I guess. But what's the next best idea, Marty?
Yeah, so you're right. That's a great idea. It's the bird bath organic. The best things come from the fans themselves, and it's organic. So it's fantastic to hear that. But look, there's just a couple of ways that you can grow your roster. Cost your roster price, the price of players. And that is, in the past, I think some of that came from the owner's own pocket himself. He was able to put some money forth to the team. The team probably paid it back in terms of loans, whatever it was. Or you can use your talent pipeline of current players and minor league players to trade them for players that are currently established. Now, again, I just want to stress that I think that the salary levels in Baltimore are going to be modest for the next few years because you don't have these bigger revenue streams out there that are dependable. If your television revenue is going in the other direction quickly now with declining subscribers to pay television number one and Masson number two, then you have to get these revenues from other sources, and it's going to have to be generating it more out of your ballpark. I think the investments that they're going to get from the state in both stadiums are going to be coming over the next 5 or 6 years. It's not going to come in the next 1 or 2 years, maybe small things.
And will Adley Rutschman be here and be a part of that? You know what I mean? Like that's because Lamar's going to be here. We found that out, right?
Yeah. And the same thing with Machado. They had to make that decision that didn't think they could afford a $30 million a year player in Baltimore, which they probably can't at this point because you don't have enough of that revenue stack to do it. So That's going to be the challenge for this market until there is other equity into the franchise. Again, maybe it's a complete sale. Maybe it's some limited partners that come in and provide new cash, whatever that is. There is going to be some events upcoming for the Orioles in the next 1 to 2 years that revolve around money coming into the franchise. However it comes in completely or comes in pieces, that's going to have to, number one, probably pay that Masson bill, or number two, finance additional opportunities in the stadium, finance a bigger and bolder roster. Because you're right, you can get to a certain level with what you have, 85, maybe 90 wins. But to get 90, 100, or 100 and plus wins, that's going to take a much larger payroll, either paying your current players in the future or getting players, particularly pitchers, who can get you over the hump.
Marty, on the Ravens, I mean, it's all we talked about in January, February, March, April, even when the baseball season started. It was a Lamarathon around here, right on up to the draft, right? As it plays out and as everything happened the way it happened, it's been such a strange circumstance, right? It's so sort of un-Raven-like, and I think Lamar won the negotiation from where I'm sitting, being that he didn't play 2 years in a row and there was no market for him at all. Nobody picked up the phone and called him. This is, I don't want to say a shotgun marriage, but a little bit of neither one of them had anywhere to go, and the Ravens didn't want to fight with him anymore, and they need him. I mean, clearly on the field, there was no Taylor Heinicke coming to save them at any point. This is a fascinating kumbaya and bringing everybody together, and Odell Beckham and Zay. I mean, they've done all they need to do to sell their tickets, buy hope. We have a chance. And it's been fascinating to watch them operate here in the offseason.
Yeah, look, I think a lot of this just is when you get into the sports business, one of the things you need to know is understand the business of the business that you're in. And there's the playing season, and then there's the business season, right? And sometimes they overlap to a certain extent, right? You know, you might be negotiating prior to a five-year extension, whatever it is. But this, I think what's transpired in our community over the last 2 years around that is just the business of football. Like, it literally is. It visits, and specifically when you have a quarterback, you haven't really had this quarterback situation from a business standpoint, you know, until going back to the Joe Flacco period, right? When he was able to leverage that. Yeah. When he was able to leverage that. So look, there was a lot of hubbub about it. A lot of speculation around the fact that he didn't have an agent. But if you look at, there's 2, 3, or 4 players now that have more recently signed, they don't have an agent. I mean, it's not literally, people will tell you, it's not necessarily rocket science when you have slotting, you know, your first 5 years that you have that you're playing. Or maybe, look, Jalen Hurts signs, and so the next guy signs for a little more than that. Now that Lamar has signed, the next is Justin Herbert, and then after that is Joe Burrow. It just sort of, it's the way the business of this sport rolls out. It's not rocket science. And so Baltimore was in that washing machine for a couple of years. It's come, it's gone. And now the focus goes back to the rest of the roster on the field, what can happen. So when you're in the quarterback market, whether it's in Baltimore or Philadelphia or Cincinnati or wherever it is, this is the churn that you're going to see. And then eventually it settles, which it has done now. And now it's on to, you know, the rest of the roster and what's going to come on the field this fall. So I view it just as the business of the business that you're in. And it's not comfortable at times. Like I said, it feels like a washing machine for a year or two. But, you know, hope springs eternal. And I think that's where we are right now.
Did it end the way you thought it was going to end? Did you always think Lamar?
Yeah, it did. Because, look, I think the way that the NFL is structured, players sign with their existing teams way more often than not. Unless you see a Kirk Cousins, somebody that played it out onto the tag for 2 years, wanted to move on to do it, the way that the NFL business is structured, it keeps players where they are for the most part, particularly quarterbacks, and it's very sequential. Like, here's the deal that Jalen Hurts got. Here's the deal that Lamar Jackson stepped into. The next deal, like I said, will be Justin Herbert. Joe Burrow is waiting for that deal to sign so he can then go to his team and say, well, here's the latest deal. It's kind of the way it works in the NFL, and a lot of it has to do with what year you were born based on how much you make versus how good you are, because 20 years ago, there were probably players that are much better than the guys today. but they just were born a little too early. And in the age of free agency, that's the way it works.
Here's Marty Conway. He does all things sports and business. We did Orioles. We did Ravens. We did regional TV. Do we leave anything out here? I mean, it is quite – sports is alive again, right? I mean, I sense that. I feel that. And what sports does – I drove down to see Seal in D.C. down Anthem, and I hadn't been down there, yeah, you know, in a plague, right, in a little bit. Oh, my God, like sports builds these cities and does this stuff. And then I look here in Baltimore and say maybe we're on the verge of something because of the prosperity that's at least perceived or real. I mean, this shouldn't be the only summer the Orioles are relevant and can get 30 or 40,000 people downtown a couple times a week.
And that's why you go after events like the World Cup, or you go after events like the NFL draft, or whatever it is. They are proven to draw. They're proven to be force multipliers for revenue in cities and communities like that. And I know the economists that are usually on the other side of the arguments that I have will tell you that it doesn't generate full-time jobs, and it doesn't, you know, it's replacement income and substitution factors and all those things.
You but teach that stuff literally, right?
But at the end of the day, it's about the emotion. People in sports, people invest their emotions far sooner than they invest their money. And so if it's the next Taylor Swift tour or whatever it is that they can generate here in the community, they need to do that, because that's really what turns communities around. It gets a lot of energy. It gets a lot of emotion. It gets a lot of national branding, all those different things. So that is why investment in sports generally turns out to be the right investment. But sometimes it takes a while. You have to have patience. And then there's that churning sometimes that goes on. But if you just sort of sit back and let it play through, usually end up in a better place.
Well, Marty, for this year and this week with Shohei Ohtani, with the Kentucky Derby winner in town, right?
Yeah.
And whatever that entails, a relevant baseball team going to play the New York Yankees, sitting above them at top of the standings, right? Like, all of this stuff is happening, but the arena too, where that roster looks like Madison Square Garden. Like, Baltimore has never seen a 6-month period where Michael Jackson's sister comes to town and Lizzo and the biggest stars and Blink 182 and you know, and then my washed up friends like Brian Adams and Joan Jett. Like, everything that's happening, Adam Sandler, Chris Rock at the Hippodrome. I mean, there's some. This has been a different kind of year for Baltimore to some degree, and I mean, it's not even 4th of July, but I do feel some rebound. And some of this stuff we talked about 5, 6, 7 years ago, you say it takes that pipeline. Yep. Well, it feels like it's kind of the baseball team coming along at this time is really helpful for all of the above.
Oh, for that part of town, for the west side of central downtown, which had been sort of uneven and everything was happening on East, you know, Harbor East to do that.
Hippodrome's been having big shows and nice crowds.
Right.
Sure.
The new arena there, having shows in there, it just brings a vibrance to it. And like I said, it's sort of that barbell in the city where you have, East Harbor East, west of the harbor, Central Harbor District. It just has to all balance out for this to work. And it looks like, you know, it's showing, like you said earlier, green shoots and signs.
All right, Marty Conway's got to get out of here. I got to get out of here because I got to get to Falston on Tuesday, the 23rd. We're going to be there courtesy of our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll be wearing my Window Nation wacky hat. Falston, and this is an award-winning restaurant. This is Restaurant Association of Maryland says Chef of the Year. So we'll be there 2 to 5 in Falston, all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery and our friends at Window Nation. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking concerts and fun and summer and baseball and horse racing. Stay with us.